The future belongs to those who control the culture, and the culture belongs to those who control the conversation. So we are having the conversations you wish you could have at church to build a safe and vibrant community. This is the Oz Table Talk Podcast. Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Oz Table Talk. My name's Luke, and I'm here at the table, the virtual table, with Dave and Ben, and we have got another episode for you guys. How are you guys?
Yeah, life's good, mate. Life's good.
Definitely.
And by the way, just for anyone that can't see Dave, obviously you can't, the podcast, but I'm admiring his commitment tonight, because if you can hear some echo in his mic, it's because he's currently sitting in a garage, like hundreds of kilometers away, traveling, and he's staying at somebody's house, and he's currently sitting in their garage by the look of it and recording this episode. So, man, that I just applaud you for that.
Don't hold it against me, people.
Cool. Well, anyway, just to get us underway, we've been doing one question to start each episode from the Humans of Adventism discussion cards. And the question that we've got to start with today is, what smell brings you back to childhood? So, what do you reckon, guys? What smell hits you with that nostalgia?
So, you know how just after dry season, everything is just absolutely dry. There's just not a drop in the ground. Mm. And the rain just comes over, and just the smell of the rain, mm-hmm. just hitting that really dry soil. Mm-hmm. Just that clean smell as the dust comes out of the air for the first time in ages.
Yeah.
It's just, it always brings me back to the first rains of the rain season in childhood. Mm. And it brings me a wave of nostalgia, remembering every time that happens.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Nice. For me, I was thinking about it. There's probably no really distinct one, but I do remember one of our family traditions that I used to really enjoy was on a Sunday morning, most weeks, not all, but most weeks, Mum would make us pancakes for breakfast. And that was kind of like a little family thing that we had going. So, you know, obviously the smell of pancakes, you know, brings back family memories. So I enjoy that. Mm.
That's cool. Yeah. For me, it's hard to quantify what the exact smell is. But whenever we would visit my nunna's place, that's my dad's mother. And when we would visit her place, the house always had a really specific smell to it. And being a Maltese family, there are a handful of foods that are just very, very common in any kind of a Maltese household. And there are things like baked macaroni or pastizzi, which is like, you know, filo pastry with ricotta cheese in them and that sort of thing. Mm. And her house was always like this combination smell of all of those different foods that had that sort of that rich, like olive oil kind of smell to it. And so whenever you go into her house, it always made you hungry, because, you know, you walk through the door and there was that wash of smell. And the funny thing is, you know, Nana passed away like in 2001. So that's a long time ago, but, still when like in 2018, we went back to New South Wales and we visited family while we were down there. And like my aunt, we went and visited my auntie's place, and we walked through the door and I was like, boom, all of a sudden, like I'm 10 again, you know, because I walked in and the house smelled exactly like that. It just had that really classic, you know, Maltese food smell to it. And it was really cool. So yeah, that's the thing that sprung to mind for me.
Nice.
So, topic for tonight, as we're sort of coming, well, obviously, it'd kind of be naive to say we're at the end of COVID, but at least for us here in Australia, we are starting to see restrictions lift. And so, as we do get towards that end, it sort of leads us to ask the question of, have we learned anything from this? And what should church look like? You know, we've been away from corporate worship for a really long time at this point, multiple months. And so we were asking ourselves the question of, well, what should church look like? If this is an opportunity for us to have a reboot, then what should that reboot entail? What should that be? So I'm curious for you guys, you know, we've all experienced the lack of church over the previous months. How has that affected you? Has it been universally positive, negative, or a mixture, or what's it look like?
I would say definitely a mixture for me. There's been some things that I've really enjoyed about it. For example, I have really enjoyed not having to go through the program of church every week, because sometimes when you're actively involved in the church, the program can be quite exhausting. And so, you know, having to be able to having to step aside from that for a little while has actually been something that I've been finding really enjoyable. On the negative side, though, I do miss, obviously, the physical fellowship of church. When you do get the opportunity to go and see people in person again after, you know, such a long time of not, you come away feeling empowered and, I don't know, revived or refreshed, whereas, you know, you don't get that same experience from... Well, I don't get that same experience, at least, from doing it online.
Yeah, I definitely resonate with that. There's definitely that feeling of far more disconnect without seeing people face to face. It's easy to forget at times that we're a body of believers when you only interact with them here and there on the internet. It's just not the same.
Yeah, I agree. I resonate a lot with what you were saying, Dave, because before this all happened, I was definitely feeling a fair degree of burnout as far as ministry goes, and in the, well, to use your words, the program side of church. I was feeling a lot of burnout of, you know, every time I get to the end of the week, it's been a massive week, and then, you know, the responsibility is to go to and make the program happen. You know, and Sabbath is supposed to be, you know, as we understand it, Sabbath is supposed to be a rest. It shouldn't be a burden. And while I wouldn't wish church away, the constant burden of that does get heavy after a while. And so, for me, it was definitely that mixed blessing. And I'm definitely at a place now where I really miss the people side of it. The program, you know, is good, but I can't say that I'm walking around thinking, man, I miss sitting down and watching the program of church. That hasn't really featured in my thinking, but I really have. I have really appreciated this time off because it has caused me to think about that, to ask myself what it is about church that's actually important, as opposed to what we do just because it's what we do.
Yeah. I will say there is one part of the program that I think I do actually legitimately miss, and that's the singing.
Yep. Mm.
Because it's not as fun singing at home by yourself along to recorded music. So I do definitely miss that, and I'm pretty frustrated by the restrictions that have been imposed upon us surrounding singing as we come back toward church again. You know, 7 square meters if you want to have singing in the congregation just makes it impossible to do church, and I just can't imagine church without the singing. So
I was actually I've just started listening to Francis Chan's book Letters to the Church. I don't know if either of you have you guys read that?
No, I haven't.
No.
Okay. I've been meaning to read that for a long time, and I started it today, and I'm not very far into it, but the thing that really stood out to me was he's talking about when he started his church, his first church. One of the key things that he said, one of the cornerstones of his church, he wanted to have people that sung, I'm trying to remember the exact words he used, but it was to the effect of people that sung as if they were actually singing to God. Not singing in a congregation, singing like they were actually singing to God. And that was one of like the key requirements. If you're going to come to our church, you are going to sing as if you are singing to God for His glory, not for anybody else, not to fit in because you're in the pew, but you are actually singing for God. And I thought, that's a really interesting point of clarification, because it's not just saying, you know, sing with gusto. It's actually putting purpose and meaning behind what you're doing. And that was one of like the three foundational pillars of what made that church soar. Yeah, you know, it was really interesting. The other thing about now I mentioned his book, the other thing that I found interesting about that is even though I may theologically not be exactly aligned with his message, I have to respect the courage that it took him to walk away from a mega church. You know, he built a mega church literally from his living room through to a true, you know, US style mega church, and then walked away from it because he felt that God was calling him to do something different. And, you know, that's something that very few people actually ever do. And in doing that, the reason that he left is because the church was creating spectators. The church might have been doing its job, it might have been doing great things, but ultimately it was creating spectators, because the great majority of the people who were involved were watching what was going on, you know, because he was the one that was doing most of the preaching, and, you know, the other pastors were the ones that were doing a lot of the decision making, and so they weren't able to develop leaders. And so, to make a long story short, after a bit of a circuitous path, it came back to the idea of house churches again. So there's small groups of people to foster everyone into a leadership role. So they're all taking responsibility. And I think that's probably, to bring it back to this conversation, I think that's one of the things that has really come out for me as far as lessons from this experience or this time apart from church. And that is, going back, I think if we're going to do church right, I really feel like there needs to be more emphasis on personal responsibility and less on, you know, program is probably one of the key features of the lessons that I've learned.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think that maybe something that the opportunity to disconnect a little bit from the program has taught us is there's got to be a sense of, well, I guess, I was trying not to repeat the same words you used, but I think they're probably just the best words, personal responsibility about our worship experience. Because like you said, we've been so used to coming to church and being spoon-fed, but now we've had to take a little bit more responsibility ourselves for how we interact with God on a Sabbath, for example. Whereas before we relied upon the people that were running the program at church. And I would love to see us, yeah, like you said, learn from that and be able to take that into the program so that, you know, if we ever go back to church as it was, which, you know, I'm sure we will, but when we go back to that, hopefully there will be a lot more sort of holistic involvement from the membership.
How do you think we do that?
It's funny, you know, we just said it's about personal responsibility, so I think that that sort of answers it in itself. But how do we encourage people to use their personal responsibility to, you know, continue to take responsibility for their own walk? Yeah, it's a really difficult question to answer, isn't it? Because, you know, it's easy to tell someone what they should do or what they need to do, but to motivate them to do it is, you know, of course, the hardest part about leadership.
Do you think the way we have historically done church discourages people from getting involved?
To an extent, yeah, definitely.
I guess the next question is, what do we do differently with everything that we've learned in order to get more people involved? And it's certainly not an easy question to answer. I mean, if we could answer it, we would have answered it a long time ago.
I think one of the biggest problems with it is when you are risk averse, and as far as my viewpoint goes, virtually all larger organizations are incredibly risk averse, because to get to that place, they had to go through a lot of risk and a lot of trial and a lot of struggle. And so the thought of doing something dramatically different is very, very scary to any ingrained institution. So therefore, when something isn't working, we tend to try to make incremental changes. And I think that is historically how we have approached the problem. We haven't said, okay, let's just burn it down and fix it. We've said, okay, well, what can we do to, you know, inch us back toward the right direction? I think for some things, or a lot of things, that's a good approach, because there's no sense burning people off if there's no need to do that. And being somebody who is naturally, in my personality, I'm naturally conflict averse. I don't want to rub people the wrong way. But what I have observed with things like this, I think the only way to fix them is to, you know, in essence, burn them down and start again in a way that is going to foster the right attitude, just like you were saying, Ben. And what that looks like, I mean, it doesn't have to be a hostile thing. I don't mean it like that. But what I'm meaning is, let's not be afraid to question the assumptions, the base level. You know, who said that we have to have a program that looks like the program we currently have? Is it a good program? Absolutely. Is it going to suit every single congregation in every single place all over the world? Absolutely not, right? So how do we then identify what's going to work for the people that we're trying to minister to? If you're trying to minister to a bunch of people, and, you know, I don't know, I'm just picking something weird out of the air, but if you're ministering to a bunch of people that are shift workers, and, you know, they are typically, you know, maybe you're in a mining location or whatever, and there's a lot of really tired people at the end of the week. Having your church service start at 9 a.m., it's probably not going to be the best thing, right? Because you're going to have half of your church either, you know, there and so tired they can barely listen, or still in at home asleep, whereas, you know, let's shift the time to get more people there. I think if we constructed what church looks like around the people that we were trying to serve, it would probably operate a lot better.
Yeah, I agree with that. I wondered myself whether one of the few things that sort of remained throughout this whole isolation experience that we've been going through because of the pandemic is the small groups that were relatively tight before the pandemic arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, one of the things I wonder about is whether going forward we should recognize that these are one of the things that actually stick, and so we should make those a priority.
I was talking to somebody not that long ago who was saying things like, oh, you know, ever since the church, you know, stopped, no one's talking to me, I feel lost or disconnected or whatever it may be. And they were implying that, well, it's not that way for you because, you know, you're part of the in crowd. And I sat there and I thought about it for a second because, you know, being somebody who is involved in the organizing of the church, they assumed that that meant that I was a part of the in crowd. And I stopped and gave it some thought and I thought, you know what? The only people that I really connect with on the regular that I would say do supply that, I don't know what you call it, but supply that part of the need of church for me that I'm still feeding off now is you guys. Like, you guys are the constant part of my week. We connect, we talk, you know, when something's going on, we talk to each other about it, we pray for each other. That's it. But that was going on before the church ever stopped, you know, and the other people that are in the church, well, you know, I hardly ever talk to them unless there's a need. And that's not to say that I'm avoiding them, but that is to say that if you're not in each other's space and you don't have an existing relationship, it's probably not going to spontaneously appear just because church is closed. And so we need to be conscious about building those relationships with intentionality, because if we don't have intentionality, nobody's just going to accidentally form a friendship.
Yeah.
Especially not when you shelter in place, right? We're at home, no one's going to build a relationship because you're not even in their proximity to have a conversation, you know, across the walkway, you know.
So you could say that our churches have potentially in the past have failed to build those deeper connections that we all need to feel and belong in the organization.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's probably one of the accidental successes of what we've done with the podcast. And I know we say it a lot, but the friendships that have come out of that, we didn't start the podcast to create the friendships, but that has been the unintentional side effect of it. And I think that highlights the need for that in our churches, that how do we get people to connect on that level that is way deeper than, you know, hi, how are you doing? How's the weather on a Saturday morning? So that may be the core of fixing the problem, more so than just trying to change the program or getting people more involved. If you actually have the people building the relationships that will survive through a lockdown experience, that's going to be a lot more powerful than trying to run another program to fix it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if one of your friends is starting a church program, you're more likely to get involved, aren't you?
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that might actually be the key to getting a lot more people involved, would be to build those social connections a lot deeper than what they already run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think as well, as what you've been saying there, Luke, that's probably also applicable to the way that we evangelize. So
definitely.
We've been lacking, like you were saying, this deep connection in our churches. And you know, therefore, when we're not at church, you know, we don't have as much contact with those people. You know, during this time of isolation, there might actually be almost no contact unless you've intentionally built those relationships. And that's, you know, just even more, what's the word I'm looking for? It's even more intense, or, oh, Anyway, the word is escaping me. It doesn't matter.
We're all having a lot of that tonight.
Yeah. Anyway, the experience is even more intense if you have these random interactions with people out in the world, and you wonder why, all of these people that I meet through my job or all these people that I meet, through, my interactions in the town aren't interested in my faith or whatever. But we've never actually gone beyond that surface level that you were talking about. And so we're sitting in our churches expecting people to come in, but we're not actually making that deep intentional effort that would actually draw them in. And so it's almost like the same pill would fix both diseases.
Hmm. Well said.
And it would certainly help with the whole bridging. You know how when people first come in, they find it a very intimidating process because it's not what they consider normal, or it's a very new experience for them, and bridging them in our own homes and giving them at least a that experience but still very familiar to them would definitely help along with getting them towards actual church attendance.
Yeah, because really honestly, until you become friends with somebody at a church, they are kooky. Most people in churches are really strange, when you haven't been in that context before. So like you were just pointing out, Ben, without the friendships, it is very, very difficult for people to bridge that gap.
We were just talking before, right, about the only thing that we missed from church is the people.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a connection with the people, then why in the world would you want to go in the first place?
Precisely, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's scary and it's intimidating, like Ben was just saying, to do that. And so, yeah, like you said, Ben, to take that intimidation factor out, obviously friendships would be the first place that you would look to go.
And this is something that I think is probably going to be one of the key factors moving forward. I think having... I was just thinking, well, I thought, man, that would make a good title, like clickbaity title for an episode, what the church can learn from the pub. It's like places like that are optimized for people's comfort. Like, I mean, if you grew up in the church and you have the mental structure of, pubs and clubs and those sort of things are places, that you shouldn't go. If that's what you grew up with, well, then you're not going to feel comfortable there. But if you were to walk in from a purely external perspective and, there's no expectations, there's no nothing, right? But what there is community there. And I think we can learn from that as a church. I'm not saying that we should lower our standards. I'm saying that we should build churches around the concept of making them accessible to people so they don't feel weird. There's going to be an element of weirdness, sure, but there's no sense us making that worse, worse than it needs to be.
Yeah.
And I think one of the key factors around that is having people in our own homes, just like we were talking about before. That's where people are going to be a lot more comfortable. So start there. But this is another question that sort of leads me into another thought. One of the things that stops me from being a crazy advocate for the idea of, let's just, like I was saying before, let's burn the program and start all over again. Like, probably one of the key factors that stops me from pushing for that hard is that, well, at least at our church, there's say 20% of the people there that are of a more mature age, and that is their thing and that's what they expect. And if the church were to dramatically change, that would dramatically negatively affect their life. And I mean, for people like that who have labored their whole life to keep the church open and doing what it is, it in my heart and in my mind, it almost feels like that's disrespectful to them to take that away from them. But at the same time, if it's what's good for the church as a whole, then we probably need to. But I don't know. How do you guys think about that? How do you think that sort of a question gets navigated?
Well, I think there's a place for the church, so I wouldn't advocate burning the program, all of that.
No.
Either. What I would like to say, though, is that I think that there's another demographic, not that this is actually a demographic, it's probably applicable to all demographics, another benefit to having the program, and that is accountability. So, although, that accountability might be false and it might be shallow, at least it's something. Whereas it's a lot easier to slip through the cracks when there isn't that accountability. And I don't know, you know, the stats as to what that would look like as a result of this pandemic. But I bet there's been a considerable amount of people who have actually given up on church altogether just because they didn't have that sort of moral pull each week to go and to be a part of a church fellowship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think we shouldn't discount that element, you know, that we are fallen human beings. Our inclination is away from God. And so things that pull us back toward Him, even if they are faulty and broken, actually do have somewhat of a positive effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I should add some clarity to what I was saying. I wasn't meaning that we don't need church, but I was meaning be willing to change it dramatically in order to fix some of the issues that we're talking about. But yeah, no, I agree. I think there is definitely a place for it, even if it isn't ideal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Potentially, you could look at it as priorities or where the most energy gets put, because you have to admit currently it is the church program itself. Mm-hmm. If churches are going to drop something, I mean, energy-wise, it's never that.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially, we could look at how churches put their priority on these smaller groups which create these relationships in the first place.
Mm.
Give them a little bit more priority. Mm. Because, as you were saying, it's still definitely important to have the church service and everything. I mean, I think it plays an important part in creating disciples, but you got to get people really interested in that before you can actually get them moving along that sort of that training line to become disciples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is true. I'm just thinking, you know, on the fly here, so, you know, sorry, these things are coming out, you know, a little bit staccato, but I think another benefit that you sort of just reminded me of just then, Ben, of the church proper as it is currently, is that let's say I'm making a disciple, and I have, you know, connected with this person. I've been working with them. Their experience is channeled through me. So they see the picture of God that I present. And I'm a single human being with a single perspective on who God is. And so the picture that I present is not holistic. It's not balanced. Let's never kid ourselves into thinking that we have a balanced theology, because we don't. You know, our perspective is always biased. And so when I'm presenting that gospel to somebody, they're going to come away with that through my lens. That's just the way it works. And so the benefit then of bringing them to a church is that they get to connect with other people and they form a family. I think that's a really important part of church. You know, definitely not that these things can't be done in small groups, but it's what the wider church family opens the opportunity for is somebody who isn't necessarily a part of the same small group that I'm a part of might connect with really well with the person that I'm making a disciple of.
Definitely.
And so then you've got this sort of, you know, cross-pollination of ideas and theological perspective and even just friendships, so that, you know, they might actually find that they connect even better with somebody else in the church than they do with me, the person who brought them in the first place, and then start to actually gather in the small group with that person instead of with me. And, you know, there's nothing bad about that. That's actually a really good thing, because that's going to enhance their spiritual experience.
Mm.
So yeah, again, sorry that this is coming out a little bit probably out of context, but I think that's another really important part of the larger gathering. But I think what you guys are bringing out, which is really important, is you know, the weight that we apply to the larger gathering probably needs to be modified a little bit. But also the way in which we do it could be focused on channeling our efforts toward the small groups rather than the small groups being focused on channeling our efforts toward the divine service.
Yeah.
Because I was just thinking on the history of our home church a little bit, and I remember when I actually first started attending, there was actually a lot more focus on those smaller groups as well, and it actually did have a bit of a different feel back then. I think it was a lot easier to connect with people back then.
Right. Whereas now that it's more program-oriented, do you find that it's maybe less approachable?
Yeah, I think as we've grown as a church, it's lost a little bit of that.
Yep.
And I think we could benefit from getting back to a little bit of that thinking that we had a few years ago.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Sure. Yeah. Similar to what you were saying earlier, Luke, about the idea of, you know, how this is transferable to companies. And a small business is always going to be more approachable and more friendly than a big, mm-hmm. a big, you know, corporate company, because of just because of the dynamics that are necessary to run a huge company.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that I'm hoping that this is relevant to the audience, but what I'm hearing, at least from the other people I'm talking to, I feel like this is a very common situation, right? Like for any church that's, say, less than 200 people, this is probably going to be what they're dealing with throughout this experience. And I think any church that has a say less than 200 people in it, depending on the makeup of the church, you know, if you're in a different area, the makeup of the church demographics may be different. But I think that the universal issue that we haven't really spoken about, I think one of the reasons that we don't see those sort of initiatives work particularly well is, you know, just having that lack of leaders at the local level. You know, you've got enough leaders to run the program, but you don't have enough leaders to run a bunch of smaller groups within that program. So I think it's one of those things where it's there is critical mass. And when you have enough people to reach that critical mass, then you can create a disciple-making machine. And without having that, I think you're always going to, you know, be struggling to make that operate. And so I think that's possibly the lead domino. That's probably where we need to apply our energies first in order to be able to achieve the other goals. So,
yeah, it's quite possible. You're right. Mm. Because if we all took responsibility, personal responsibility, for making those, you know, deep connections as individuals and then as part of small groups, then when we do gather together as a church family for the collective worship service, everybody's going to be there already connected, already belonging, and therefore I would imagine there'd be a higher degree of participation and, you know, heartfelt worship like you were talking about with your Francis Chan analogy before.
So I feel like, well, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like we're probably reaching the extent of where we're going with this. Do you guys have any other thoughts that you want to share before we start wrapping this one?
I think we've probably talked a little bit about this in another episode, but what COVID has taught me, probably even more importantly than, you know, these things we've been talking about today, is the value of hospitality and, you know, the early church met together in their houses on a frequent basis to break bread together and to fellowship and to pray and to read and those sorts of things. And I just think that we should be doing that a whole lot more. When you can't, you miss it. When you can, you're too busy. And so I think it's got to be something that we, as a, you know, post-COVID, what we've got to do is we've got to be intentional about that. Fellowshipping together amongst ourselves, you know, breaking bread together ourselves, but also actually being hospitable to our neighbors and meeting new people and inviting them over to our homes to get to know them and to hear their stories and to start to try to transpose, you know, the gospel over their stories. Because everybody has a need, but that need is specific to their own experience and their own story. And, you know, we're never going to be able to reach them until we get to the, you know, what's going on behind the surface.
Yeah.
And to get there, we've got to stop and hear them out and listen to their stories and, I guess, connect those dots. So, you know, if I could just say anything to add to this conversation, I just think it's that. Church is more about those things, in my opinion, than it is about the program. And the program is going to reflect how well we're doing those things, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, absolutely true. And I think if you look at the, you know, the first century church, you know, it would much more closely resemble what you're talking about than it does the existing program. You know, there's nowhere that I see in the Bible where it says that there should be, you know, this exact program to run a church. It's much more to do about the people that are there rather than the corporation that's there.
Definitely.
Yeah, and like you just think about the influence that a, you know, a boss or a manager can have over a company. And so if we as leaders would project that lifestyle and that vision to our congregations, and when I say we as leaders, I don't just mean we who have official positions of leadership. But if you're listening to this podcast, it's probably because you have an interest in making the church better. You know, you've gone this far through the podcast and you're not completely bored. So you've probably got some vested interest. So therefore, you are one of those people that I talk about when I say leaders. And so for us who consider ourselves to be those people who have a vested interest in church, we can change the culture of our churches by being the culture that we intend on seeing the church have. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's going to be incremental. Yes, we're going to be fighting against the current sometimes. But if we don't start doing it, it's definitely not going to happen.
Yeah.
Post-COVID for me means I need to action that. And if I don't, I can't expect a change in my local congregation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cycling back around, I think the key message that is the takeaway from this episode is that personal responsibility, right? If we all take that personal responsibility, we start to see the changes that we're actually needing rather than the status quo that we've always had. So.
Sure. Yeah. And also, again, this is really random and out of time.
Yeah, that's fine.
My brain's obviously functioning on a different wavelength tonight. But what I want to say is that another thing that COVID has taught me is that there are some really great online tools that we can use to take away all the barriers. So that if somebody is not able to make it to church, there's no reason why they can't still have the worship experience. I think, for example, with our Sabbath school group, we've been meeting over Zoom for our Sabbath school classes. And, it's just occurred to me throughout this experience that there's no reason why if one of my Sabbath school kids is sick, that they can't still be part of Sabbath school from home when they're sick, through Zoom.
Yeah.
I think of the oldies, or I think of the people that are sick in hospital. Why couldn't we set them up so that they could at least, from a spectatory perspective, be participating, and then sometimes even in small enough groups, be able to contribute through an online medium.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that, the COVID situation has taught me that I think we can do better in the future, rather than just being like, oh, well, that person can't come anymore. To try to include them in some way, we've got the technology available, let's use it.
Yeah.
And let's face it, our older church members, a lot of them are on board with the technology now. I know a lot of them were a little bit more resistant to it, but it's great to see them all get on board now that it's gone mainstream throughout our church.
Yeah, and even if they aren't, as a church, why don't we take a bit of responsibility and say, if you're at least willing, we can teach you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, with that, we'll probably wrap that one up. But thank you guys so much for staying with us for the episode. We hope that it's been interesting for you. If you have any thoughts on that yourself, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you in the comments or anywhere else. And also, if you have enjoyed the episode, why don't you share it with a friend and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. So until next week, see you later. And that's the end of another episode. Just before I head off, I want to encourage you to go over to our page on Facebook and also our account on Instagram and follow us there, because that is where we interact with our listeners and we would love for you to enter in and join the conversation. Also, while you're signing up, I would also recommend signing up to our mailing list on our website, oztabletalk.com.au. If you do that, you will receive our exclusive content, because occasionally we do release exclusives and they only go out to our mailing list. So I would strongly recommend you go and sign up for that. If you have a few more minutes to be one of the most amazing listeners on the planet, you can go over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review, because reviews help us to grow and they help other people to find us. So if you want to help us reach those goals, please jump in and give us a review. The final message that I'd like to leave you with is to let you know about our Patreon account. Now, Patreon is a way for creators to get paid for creating, and ultimately what we do does cost money to get us hosted and have the services that we need to run the podcast. And so if you'd like to help us do that, jump over onto patreon.com/oztabletalk, and you can give anything from even a dollar a month upwards. But at different levels, there are different benefits, different rewards that we want to give you just to say thank you for being an amazing supporter of ours. If you can't afford that, we would just gratefully accept your prayers, because that is what our ministry runs on. And so with that, I will leave you to your day, and thank you so much for listening to this episode. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.